Welcome. This is the Comedy Club podcast here at the Comedy Club of Kansas City. I'm your host, Dustin Kaufman. I'm sitting here with Mr. Sam Tripoli, the other Sammy T.
Thanks for having me on your show.
How are
Excited.
You? Dude, I always love having you back. You've been with us so many times.
When did I start playing your club?
The first time you were here, I will always remember.
Oh, no. What did I do?
It was the second week of June 2020.
Oh, my God.
You are our second road comic back after reopening from our COVID shutdown.
Oh, snaps.
And your people showed up like COVID didn't even exist.
So during COVID, back when, my girlfriend handles all my bookings. But I used to be with this agency, and I was like the only guy doing the road. There was a couple of us doing the road, and they called those suicide runs. So we would go, and I would just go in these places, and I forget where it was. I think it was St. Louis I went, and they literally banned food and drink. Like, food, okay, but drink, like, most comics know, like, part of the gig is to sell booze. You know what I'm saying? Get the booze sold. That's why the club makes some money. It's a blessing.
Yeah.
They weren't even selling booze. And I'm like, what am I here for? Why am I here? I did shows for four people.
We reopened in May, got shut down in March, whatever, right? And we did local shows for the first couple of weeks, local headliners, getting 12, 20 people a show, 25 people a show the first few weeks. And then, we were selling out our limited capacity. It was very limited back then too. Eventually, because we knew the situation where it was like people were uncomfortable, people were hesitant, you know? And so even though we could have our tables X amount, we had them so far apart.
Dude, it was crazy, bro.
Especially for the first month or two so people would feel comfortable just being in a room.
Yeah, it was crazy. My fans didn't care.
Like, our rent was like, not voided or waived, but we didn't have to pay rent for a while.
Oh, that's nice.
Which helped us operate. There was a payback in place that we ended up knocking out with a really good grant we got from everything. So it helped us just be open for the city.
So, funny story. I get called into a comedy club, the Skyline Comedy Club in Wisconsin. It's right during the heat of it. So I go there. It's a decent crowd for a COVID time. We're doing the shows. It was great. Meet and greet after. So I get home. My manager calls me, and she goes, "I have to tell you something." I go, "What?" She goes, "Somebody just emailed me. They had COVID, and they tested positive. They wanted me to tell you." I'm like, "Why did they test? Why they email me? I get a plausible deniability." But now I think there's a
somebody from the club.
One of my fans emailed my manager, I guess.
Oh, God.
And so I go get tested. I'm like, I got to get tested. But my brother's coming into town, and he was like COVID crazy. My brother was so COVID crazy, he got this experimental jacks done just because he wanted to help. I'm like, are you nuts, dude? But he did it. So he was COVID crazy. He's driving in from Phoenix, Arizona. I go get tested. I come back. By the time I'm home, they're already calling me, right? And they're like, and this guy is so dramatic. You would think like he's about to tell me there's someone in my family passed away or something. He's like, "I don't know how to tell you this. I'm like, "What?" He goes, "You've tested positive." I'm like, "Why are you so dramatic, dude?" He's like, "It's going to be okay. Just call us." And they would call me. I'm like, "I'm not answering the phone. Get out of here, dude." So anyways, I had to tell everybody in the house that I had it. Well, my brother walks right in.
Oh, my God.
He walks right in. He literally walked in. I go, "Dude, I got to tell you something." He goes, "What?" I go, "I have COVID." And his face goes white. He turns around, walks right out the door, gets in his car, and drives to New York.
Just walked out the door.
Walked out the door, drove to New York, got tested in New York, not positive.
I never got it, and I was here the whole time. I mean, with all the whatever people we had here. I never had it until after people stopped getting it. And it was like, I felt really tired one day. I took a test. I went home. I just loaded up with like vitamins and juices, and yeah. I was fine in like a day.
Do you know why? I hear something crazy. I've not gotten sick since I started doing nicotine.
Really?
I haven't gotten sick. And I heard Tucker Carlson talk about that. He's like, I haven't gotten sick since I started doing nicotine. And I go, holy crap. Because I used to, because I'll run myself ragged and then my body will be just like, nope. One day, nothing. Start doing nicotine. I haven't been sick. My girlfriend's been sick every other week. I'm never sick.
Start smoking, everybody, is what we're trying to
now,
say.
Now, dude, you do your own tobacco, right?
I hand roll my own
That's
tobacco.
Different. The cigarettes you buy have chemicals in it.
Yeah.
They test this stuff. It's pretty pure. So, like, the problem with cigarettes is the smoke. It's not the nicotine in it. But I haven't. It's, like, crazy to
me.
So,
what are you taking for your nicotine?
Look at this, dude. I just go to shows and people just hand me fucking nicotine, dude. I got two more back at the hotel.
And they're pouches?
They're pouches. This is watermelon. It is fire.
Is it like a spitless pouch kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's the best.
Yeah?
I do them all day. I got
to
slow
down. Did you used to smoke cigarettes?
Never.
But you're like...
The only time I ever smoked was if a hot chick was smoking and I wanted to hit on her. I get a cigarette, make my move.
Just walk in there and bum a cigarette.
Hey, you got sick? Hey, anyway, what's your name, Bob? I live near here. Let's go hang out.
You own a comedy club now?
I own a comedy club.
How cool is that? Are you there a lot?
I'm there a couple weeks of the year. My friend Mike Romanelli runs it. It's a very funny story. So, did I ever tell you the story about how we worked together?
I don't know. Maybe I heard a little bit about it in Tulsa. When we were talking down there, but I don't remember the details.
So
our fans have definitely not heard this story.
So one day I get a call from this woman and she's like, hi, I helped this guy in New Jersey book a comedy club and he wants to book you. I'm like, okay, I'll do. Yeah, no problem. She goes, okay, it's the Chuckle Shack. I go, I'm not playing the Chuckle Shack. She goes, what? I go, I'll play his room. I'm just not going to tell anybody I'm playing a Chuckle Shack. She goes, why? I go, that's the hacky club in a joke. You're like, I'm playing the Chuckle Shack.
Right.
She goes, okay. So we hang up. She goes, the owner wants to talk to you. And I go, okay. He calls me up. He's like, what's going on? I go, dude, I'll play your club. I don't care. I'm just not going to tell anybody I'm playing a Chuckle Shack because that's a hacky joke that everyone tells. He goes, yeah, she named it. I go, what was the name of it before? He goes, Tiff's Comedy. I go, call Tiff's Comedy and I'll come do it. So I get there, dude. And the room is all white. It's like a banquet room, right? Oh, so it's like doing stand-up in an operating room, right? Yeah. So I talked to him like, hey, dude, listen. Because I started the Dojo of Comedy in L.A. It was very funny. It was an underground comedy club that was upstairs, right? So like this one restaurant called the Sycamore Tavern had a cool upstairs, kind of like this, right? And I'm like, dude, let's run a comedy club out of here. They're like, yeah, do it. Run it. So we started booking comedy share. And I'm like, I want to build my brand.
How many seats was it?
I think this thing could sit 60. It was like a belly room type room. Yeah. And we started running it. They were nice guys, but they just ran into the ground. Anyways, because I think it was a tax write-off. Anyways, so I go, hey, man, can we call it the Dojo of Comedy? He goes, yeah, sure. Let's work together. So we started working together. So... Every other phone call, I'm like, you got to paint it, dude. You got to paint it. It's white. You got to paint it. Resisted it for a while. So then it became August when comedy clubs slowed down because of summer. I go, dude, it's August. We have money in the bank. Take that money out of our bank account and pay for it to get painted. I go, paint it black. Yeah. He goes, okay, I'll do it. Did it. First show, he called me up. He's like, you're totally right. It's totally different. So now it's a little kill box. It's a 100-seater.
Okay.
People from New York love to come. It's a great place to work on their hour when they're about to shoot their special. And yeah, dude, I love it, man.
100 seats is easy to manage, too.
Yes, it's great. When you start getting into 250s, probably if you're like you guys, that's probably a great thing if you're like on the road and stuff. Just outside New York, guys can come in, 100 seats, fill it up.
It's hard to make money on the road for certain comics with 100 seat rooms.
There are people like that.
Yeah.
Labor Day weekend's been like that for me.
But like some comics, you need that 250 plus to get certain comedians so they can hit their nut. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
But there are a lot of comics who are happy to do, like, it's just, you know, because if people are coming out, people are coming out.
I like to play any room. You know, like, I like weird, crazy gigs, too, because that's where I started.
Do you find with a smaller room or maybe a smaller town that name value isn't as important with a smaller club? Because you have less seats to fill. People are just coming out for...
I think the value... or the type of comic the club gets will help it start selling tickets. So they'll be like, you know, they always get good comics. I might not know who this is, so I'll come see it, dude.
Yeah.
I think some of these comedy clubs build way too big a comedy, bigger rooms, like 400, 500 seaters.
Yeah.
And most of the guys who can fill that are playing theaters. You know, there's a lot more me than there are those.
If you're going to do a club with 400 seats, multiple shows, you're probably just going to do it in one show at a theater.
Like, when I go on the road, I do one show, I can pack it out. You know, over 3 days, it's a little different, but I like to work on my act in those ways. So, I don't know. I like
you like smaller. Performing. You're a comic. Like performing.
I do. I like, you know, it's so funny. Like, how long you want to do? I'll do 40, then I'm doing an hour every time. You know, I enjoy it. I like it a lot. I think comedy's in the best place it's ever been. People are always complaining. We're in our wedding singer stage of comedy. Comedy goes through eras. We're in a wedding singer era.
What do you mean by that?
A lot of the crowd work stuff. Some of the older guard really hates it. I'm fine with it. Like, Ian Bagg's been doing that forever. He's like a legend of that stuff. He's like a next level guy on that.
I mean, that's definitely an effect, just one of the side effects of social media driving this industry.
Yeah, I get it, man. But I think that's the beauty of it, because most of those guys would be just doing corporates and cruise ships. Like, the guys that are killing right now, back when I started, they would be corporate or writing on shows. Now it's like everyone can find their crowd, which I think is the best. And who knows how big your crowd is? Your crowd might be 100 people in anything. If you do a one-nighter and you pack it out,
yeah,
you can make good money that night. That's kind of the model now. Doug Stanhope started that. Now, because of social media, people can do their own kind of thing, which I think is great.
Yeah, I'm definitely not... I mean, I don't think that was... And it probably didn't come off that way, but I don't think that was meant to be like a negative, like as being a side effect of social media. It's just a fact. Like, because social, everything has gone to social media.
Media is the new gatekeepers.
It's
who they let to be seen, who they don't let to be seen.
Well, I mean, and radio, for marketing club-wise, radios don't work. TV doesn't really work. I mean, so like, it's all on social.
Well, you guys do a great job.
Well, thank you.
I can tell the clubs that work.
That try.
You know, I remember about 20 years ago, a comic named Chad Zumach and I, we just put together a little tour together to do it and have fun. I had a small podcast that was doing well, so we decided to go on the road and do some stuff. And we weren't doing huge numbers, but it was good. It was fun. And then I played the Syracuse Funny Bone on a Wednesday in a fucking blizzard, and 50 people showed up. And I was happy.
Yeah.
But they capped me at $300, which is fine. I didn't care. I just wanted to go. But I got off, and they were like, oh, we want more people. I go, dude, you capped me at $300. You could have made way more money. But because they weren't, like, now I could tell the clubs that are just, like, attacking, that's how you do it. You got to attack. You got to, and I feel, maybe I'm wrong, you'll tell me, but it's easier now because all these comics are constantly posting clips.
Easier to promote, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's easier to put out stuff.
If every comic worked equally as hard,
okay,
to promote.
I respect that.
So the challenge is, because it used to be you would take your comics to radio, then take them to TV. And,
yeah, I remember that.
And then you take them back to the hotel or the condo, and the whole city comes out. And it is not that anymore.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Now it is very social media driven.
And algorithms.
So you book people who have fan bases, followings, large followings, who don't want to flood their pages with marketing. But it's like, man, sometimes it's pulling teeth just to get a post, to get a story, to get anything. It's like, so we can reach comedy fans, but we can't reach their fans.
I get it.
Like, you are the only ones who can reach your fans.
Let me ask you something. How long out do you think a comic should start promoting? Because I've always been told tickets start selling 2 weeks out.
Well, they start selling more, but we have them sell. I mean, we put them on the calendar. We have an event list that shows all of our upcoming events when we send e-blasts. So we're not hard pushing it, but we're selling. So if it's there, it's selling. What we like to do right now is we like to get a just announced collab with our comics when we put it on the calendar, like, or to make a little.
Do some people not collab with you?
Some people don't want to follow. Most people do. Some people don't want to follow comedy clubs, and it's harder to a little bit hard. Most people, especially when you just make it seem like this is what we need, then that's what, you know what I mean? Most people will, but occasionally it can be frustrating. It's like, dude, you have how many hundreds of thousands? Tell somebody you're going to be here.
Do you find that the younger comedians who hit are easier or harder to work with?
I think younger comedians are fine. It's the people who, I think the frustration for me is I've been in this industry for so long, 2.5 decades, you know. So when I'm happy for everybody's success, and I'm happy for every new customer we get in here and every ticket we sell. But sometimes when people just go from social media to headlining, they don't have that respect or understanding of the industry.
Yes,
so that side for me can be frustrating, but that's not too much either. You know what I mean?
It's like not of appreciation.
I'm trying to be very nice.
I get it. I've seen it. I think because the game has changed, like clubs in LA or New York get affected because people jump those clubs. They go right to the theaters.
I'm not going to point names. I'm not going to say any names. We had somebody who blew up on social, doing well on social media, had a good amount of tickets. It was just a one-off. We're under the impression it's even our contract. We're booking local support, right? The MC feed, it's all. So everybody's booked. They're booked out in advance. Everybody's there. He comes in last minute with people we've never seen in our life or heard of, and it's like, this was not, and I'm just straight up like, dude, we have support booked. Like, this was confirmed. This is all we have. And I was like, I have to pay. They're here. I have to pay them.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and is just as genuine as possible and says, why do you have to pay them? And I'm like, bro, because I booked them and they're here.
And they're human beings.
You're a comic saying, why do you have to pay these comedians?
Agree,
fuck you. Just fuck you.
Like, I totally agree. It's so fucking nuts to me.
Yeah.
How some people look at it. And when you do jump, I've always said, like, every step is a learning experience. So when you do get to where you want to be, you are prepared for everything. And you're somewhat humble. I'm not saying all headliners are humble, but usually the ones I know have an appreciation of the journey. But that's all gone now. You're going right to the... And once you get to those theaters, really learning is done. Because you're playing these crowds that love you. And you could say, boop, boop, beep, boop, and they go crazy. So I think it's an interesting thing, dude. I do think there's more comedy fans out there than ever. Like, it used to be like, if you couldn't get on HBO or the Tonight Show, there's no chance.
And they're going to... And they're buying a lot of theater tickets to see those comics too, because when comics blow up today, they blow up quick and they do go work the theaters. I think clubs probably got a bad reputation in the past, shitty owners fucking with ticket money, this and that stuff, you know, whatever, lying about sales. I don't
get that, why they do that, but it just is what it is.
So it's important to me to be as transparent and open and honest, not just with the comedians, but, dude, I mean, as much as they try to, like, it's with the agents as well. You know what I mean? Like, I've heard people like, I've never sent that full report to the agent. Well, why? Why would you? I mean, it's the ticket sales. You know what I mean? You can't punish a comic because the agent can be a shyster. Like, be a better negotiator if you want more money.
It's crazy, dude. You don't know who's negotiating on your behalf. That's why I have Dana. She's great at it. Yeah. We call it sending the Jew. She goes here and just starts ripping dicks. Because as an artist, you just want the gig, so you'll take a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
You'd be like, I'll pay you now. Oh, I'll take it.
Well, that I try to have good... I know I talk to a lot of club owners, and I understand where they're coming from. A lot of them, you know, like... towards agents, we're like, dude, they're just sharks. They don't give a fuck. They're this. They're gonna take you forever. And on some points, that is true. And I have in the past been like, I've had to stop comic negotiations. I've been like, dude, you are making me feel like I'm negotiating for a used car, and I'm just trying to book a comedian.
Yeah,
like this isn't the way it should be.
Sure, it's chaos.
And I've had to stop in certain points and be like that and try to correct for a more open, honest approach of booking. Like, but my, even with the agents, knowing how they, yeah, it's a business, and understand, right, they're the person in that position, and I try to keep relationships. So like I've had agents tell me I'm going to get a new agent. I'm like, no, absolutely not. I've been with you since I've opened. You're staying in clubs. I'm staying with you. This is a conflict of interest over here, or whatever it is. It's like, I want to continue those relationships. And I think that helps me get fair,
yeah,
more fair deals.
You're
as
a great
well.
Guy. Thanks, I love man. Playing your club.
Thank you. I love having you here.
It's good to be here.
I like that I'm going to have two clubs for you to play now.
Yeah, I'm excited. I always like to. That's my goal in 2026 is to play a bunch of markets I haven't either never played or haven't played in forever.
I'm. You know what I'm excited about? I'm excited for. Yes, it's my second club, right? But it's a small town in the Lawrence, Kansas, KU, downtown, and it's a smaller room. So we're going to be like the pressure of that, you know, being about 125 seats versus 260 with this enormous overhead. It's like you have to book a certain way.
Yes.
And Kansas City being a bigger town is very, they want to support a successful thing. When the Royals are doing great, it's packed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they want to support a sure thing, which is why in Kansas City, I didn't open a small club to begin with. I was like, if people think we're just...
from here?
Yeah. Okay. I was like, if people... When we opened, there was room for a full-fledged club. And I was like, it'd be easier to open a smaller room, but I don't think the city will support it as much if you're not bringing in the bigger names. And yes, there is truth to that. It can be name-driven. Yes. Where I think in a smaller town, and I think with smaller seats, it doesn't have to be as much name-driven. We just have to book the absolute funniest people. I mean, obviously, we book people who sell tickets in college, right? Or who sell tickets. But I think if you can just book the funniest people every week, I think that smaller town will come out and support that.
I think so, because it's like bringing showbiz to them, right? They don't get that. They haven't had that. And that's like something that just could be add to their experience and add to the town something to do. I think smaller towns need that.
They have... theaters where, you know, Lewis Black, David Cross, and the bigger name, they will play the theaters there, but everything under theater level, they have not gotten much of,
yeah,
comedy-wise. And there's a
market for that.
And we book so many of them here that I'm excited. I am excited to be able just to be like, oh, you're funny, you're funny, you're funny, and you're funny. Let's have a month.
Yeah.
Let's put a little diversity
just
on that.
The bangers.
Banger.
Show them nothing but greatness. That's what I'm all about, dude.
Yeah.
But it's also, you could also bring in guys you know are about to blow up, and it's a great place. 100 seaters is a great place to bring in new guys.
Let's sell 500-600 tickets this weekend and have a great weekend.
Yeah, and just like, because like when you're nice to young comics, that's the thing about a comedy club. In my showcase clubs are a little different, but I think young blood in a comedy club is very important, and young comics remember that.
I try to balance. I try to keep my ear very well to the scene. I talk to comics. I talk to agents. I talk to bookers. I go to festivals, and I really try to. I watch social media. I follow comics. Most club owners probably don't follow. I just, you know, because I will if I. So like I have, if I see somebody that's really funny doing well, I will get him in for even for a one nighter just to get him in the door. I love when I book somebody I believe in who's still like coming. And then, like, after they've been here one, two, three times, suddenly you're selling, like, because they're just blowing up, you know? And I think we have a good balance of part farm team roster,
yeah,
part, like, A-list roster, yeah, you know?
That's how you, I think that's the way to go. Obviously, it'd be great to have none but bangers, but I also think it's like,
to me, those, if I'm booking you and you're not sell, you got to be really funny,
yeah,
for me to book you,
yeah,
knowing you're not going to come, yeah, in and sell 1,000 tickets.
People on the wall that you bring in.
You got to be really funny for me. I won't even book every comic that'll sell 1,000 tickets because some people, I don't want the fucking headache.
Yeah.
I don't want your fucking drugs in, I'm here.
Sure.
I don't want your bullshit in here.
Yeah.
I don't, we don't have to put up with your bullshit.
Yeah, I get that.
Anymore.
I get that.
And I just don't, I dealt with the over green, this all, so it's a great balance that we have here.
That's how you have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting the crazies in there, a pain in the ass. Even that's with comedy, dude. I don't really care how you do on stage. Are you a nice guy off stage? That means way more to me. I'll hang out with someone who's okay funny. I mean, selling tickets might be a different thing, but there's some real assholes out there.
What do you have coming up?
I have a bunch of stuff coming out. I have a comic book that is family friendly for kids. It's called Chaos Twins. It's based on my two daughters.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Issue number 2 is coming out. If you go to chaostwins.com, you can grab the second issue. The first one came out super successful. Second one's coming out.
Chaos Twins.
Because in LA, it gets really hot, right? So we have to go to indoor, like, play parks. Which, by the way, the Armenians run. They got them on lockdown. Every time I go to it, it's like my people are everywhere. We're finally running something. So every time I'd walk in, I'm like, the Chaos Twins are here. And then they would just go nuts. So I wanted, because, you know, when you're a parent and you're watching stuff, you got to be like, what's in this? It's hard because you got to micromanage everything. So I'm like, I wanted to create something that parents didn't have to worry about it. And I told the writers, I go, I don't want any like Easter egg stuff that where it's like, if you read it, you realize it's an adult joke. I don't want any of that stuff. You know my act. I'm crazy. But I wanted to create a kid's thing that parents can read to their kids. And right. It's about conspiracies. And so it's about two kids who move on to a new block. And every house is a new conspiracy. And once they solve the conspiracy, they move out. New conspiracy moves in. And the first one was great. And now with this AI stuff, everyone hates AI, but I think we're going to be able to animate it, which
you do AI animation for the.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to hire a human being, but it's so much more.
Software you have? I have a thing I would like to do with.
I want to do that too, so I'm working on that. And then I got a movie that might be getting made. I'm going to have one line in it. I don't want to act because I don't like acting.
Okay.
Coverage is bad, and then I'm working on a really crazy project. I can't get too much into it because I don't want anyone to jack the idea, but if it goes, it's going to be amazing. So I'm very excited about it. So I you know, I'm blessed that there's some people who love my podcast, Tim Full Hat, and they want to work with me. So I pitch them this idea and they're like, yeah, dude, that's a great idea. And we kind of got the Michael Jordan of this thing that we want to do to work with us. It's like a blessing. So yeah, man, we're really excited about it.
Are you just at Sam Tripoli?
At Sam Tripoli on everything. I'm finally got on Shadow Band. I think I'm back to Shadow Band, but I finally can do ads. I can finally take out ads on Instagram. I couldn't take it out for 5 years. I lost my account on Twitter and on Instagram for like years. They finally gave it back to me. I had to pay a guy $3,000 to get my Instagram back.
Really?
$3,000.
And that's not a conspiracy.
That's not a conspiracy.
check out Sam. Check out the Tinfoil Hat Podcast, one of the best conspiracy theory podcasts going. I love you.
I love you too, buddy.
Every time you're here, it's wonderful. You'll always have a special place in my heart.
Anytime, all the time.
And in my home. So subscribe, follow, tell your friends to watch, and follow the Comedy Club at the Comedy Club KC across the board. Come see shows, Kansas City, and soon to be Lawrence, Kansas. All right. Bye.